This is an interview with Imogen Yarbrough, and this interview is being conducted on November 10th, 2011, at the Museum of Seminole County History. The interviewer is Joseph Morris, representing the Linda McKnight Batman Oral History Project for the Historical Society of Central Florida. Ma'am, could you tell us about where you were born and when?
I was born in Ocala, Florida, on Sanchez Street, August the 2nd. 1935.
Okay. And could you tell us a little bit more about where, what kind of environment you grew up in, house and...
Yes, this is a two-story home that my mother was living in at the time with her in-laws. And we went back later and purchased the home, but I was around 10 years old at that time. So she lived there for about a year and a half with me. This home is still standing. When I go to Ocala on business or pleasure, I go by and look at it and have wonderful memories there because it was across the street from a city park called Tuscarawas Park. That was very close to a logging company that was in Ocala at that time, and they used the ponds to float the logs in. So it was a wonderful place for a child to grow up and play. We could fish the pond, we could wade the pond, and there was tennis courts all around that one particular pond. So we just had a wonderful playground right there as we were growing up. That was way before television and not many radios.
Okay, ma'am. The community, was it a very sparse community or very condensed?
It was a large community because that's very close to Silver Springs, which is a beautiful natural spring. And the Seminole Indians were there for quite a while, and there was a big reptile collection out there that people could pay to go and visit. That was originally started by a gentleman by the name of Ross Allen. And he played with alligators and milked rattlesnakes for the venom for medical purposes. So people could go out there and pay to watch all that. It was an entertainment place. But as children, the city took a bus out each year during the summer, each day, and you could have swimming classes out there. So we were very fortunate to learn to swim early and enjoyed that particular area. Now it has grown into a home place for horses, especially race horses and quarter horses.
At Silver Springs, ma'am?
No, Ocala.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I didn't switch right. But Ocala has continually grown out, and it's quite a large city.
Can you tell me any more changes that might have occurred from when you were growing up in Ocala and now how it is today? Like, when you go there, what differences stand out to you the most, ma'am?
More people. Of course, everything was centrally located uptown at that time. There was a town square in the center of town, which is still there, with a band shell. At that time, it had a band shell on it. And a band shell is used for a band to play music while people sit around and enjoy it, like a park atmosphere. There's a lot of shopping centers, of course. Most towns have those now. But everything was built around that square and just evolved out from it like a star. There's a lot of horse enthusiasts and horse breeders and raisers up in that country, as I said earlier, now. So they have large statues of horses all around the square at this point. So it's grown, typically, like every other city in the state of Florida.
Is any particular reason the horse training mm-hmm. took off in Ocala?
They've got a lot of lime rock up in that area, and that helps to grow very strong grass. And you need good grass for cows and horses. And it was some people were already growing horses in the area, and they had a racehorse that had won one of the very important races that was raised from that area. So it just, after he won the race, they just started coming to that area to raise their animals and winter their animals.
Oh, better climate?
Better climate.
Gotcha, man. How do you feel about the changes that have occurred from when you were growing up to now? Do you, positive, negative changes, anything?
I guess most of it's positive. I want to feel that way. I try to find something positive in everything I encounter. Sometimes it's harder than others.
And any examples of that, ma'am? You know I was going to ask.
Oh, goodness. I'll think on that one and come back. Okay, Joseph?
Okay.
We'll
keep
that
in mind.
The end. Okay.
And so after that, where have you lived? Have you always lived in Ocala, ma'am?
My mother went to work, and I lived with my grandmother in Oxford.
Okay, we're back, and we were discussing where you've lived over the years, ma'am?
Yes. Oxford is a little town in Sumter County on the west side of the state, south of Ocala. And that's where my mother was raised. And I lived the first year of before school and the first grade, I lived with my grandmother. And I had a sister, Nadine, who was about 3 years younger than myself. And back then, we carried our lunch to school in little brown bags, or maybe like a little syrup can, whichever you had. But grandmother always made sure that I had an apple in my lunch every day. And there wasn't always an apple left for my sister Nadine to have when she wanted it under those particular circumstances. So one morning, grandmother, we called her Granny O'Berry, was packing my lunch, and my sister Nadine asked for an apple. And Granny said, "Nadine, you know that Imogene's got to take that apple for recess." And Nadine got very disturbed and started crying, and she says, "When I get big and go to school, I'm going to slap recess's face for taking Imogene's apple." So that has always been a laughing situation in our family. Recess, of course, was time out in school to play outside. Mm-hmm. Not every kid even knows what recess is, because now it's usually called break or gym, something of that nature.
Right, ma'am. What kind of jobs did your family have and that you had also?
My mother's people were in the cow business. Her brothers and her dad were. And my mother's mother passed away at her birth. So she was adopted by the O'Berry family and moved to Oxford. And the couple that adopted her were just good old salt-of-the-earth people. Granddaddy was what we would call jack of all trades. He was a repairman. He repaired people's cars. He repaired their equipment that broke down. He repaired their shoes. He just was a good fixer-upper. And of course, Granny stayed at home and canned and took care of the garden and the family.
And what about your...
My mother worked as... she was in charge of the waiters and waitresses at a big hotel in Ocala. That was her night job. Her day job was cashier for a Piggly Wiggly, which was a strand of grocery stores at that time that later became Winn-Dixie that we know today. She worked Winn-Dixie for 20-something years.
Okay, ma'am. And how come your grandparents, you said, worked in cattle?
Yes.
But your mother did not?
No.
Did she not have an interest, ma'am, or?
No, by being adopted out, mm-hmm. she wasn't where the cattle were. So she went straight from school to getting married and then working at Winn-Dixie and at the hotel.
Okay. And when did you start working, ma'am?
I started working as a freshman in high school, and I worked for the Winn-Dixie meat in the meat department, making hamburger, cutting up chickens, weighing out the meat, and wrapping it to go into the case to be sold. And I would work on weekends and holidays.
And did you? How long did you have that job for, ma'am?
4 years of high school, and about a year afterwards.
Okay, and what did you do after high school, ma'am?
My husband and I got married.
Okay.
And he went to the service. And I went back and worked Winn-Dixie for a while till I could go to Oklahoma whenever he was transferred to Oklahoma after basic training. But let me go back into how I met Edward.
Okay.
In October, in fact, October the 26th, 1949, my mother moved to Geneva. She had remarried, and my stepfather was coming down to help his brother work his orange grove and cattle over in the Chuliota area. So we moved to Geneva because there was a good school there. And mother went to work at the Piggly Wiggly, which is now the Goodwill store here in Sanford on Palmetto. And at that time, we moved into a lovely home. And that afternoon, we had some heavy furniture to be moved. And Miss Pearl Yarbrough was the lady who owned the home. And she said that when her son came in, he would help move the furniture for us that afternoon, along with my stepdad. So later on, we heard what we know now was a cow whip making a noise coming up the road. And it was Edward and his uncle coming in from work, and their habit was to crack the cow whip all the way up the lane. And that was just to give them practice, as well as let Mr. Kilby's wife and Edward's mother know that put dinner on the table, we're coming home. So anyway, that's how I met Edward. And he had graduated from high school in June of that year, and we were moving in October. So we didn't begin dating because I wasn't old enough to date for another year and a half.
How old were you at this time, ma'am?
I was 13.
Okay.
So he had to wait on me to grow up. That's what he had to do. And he did. But that's the way I met him.
Okay, ma'am. Can you tell us a little bit more about him and then the rest of your family? Mm-hmm. Because I know you mentioned he was in the service, and that I'm assuming you moved to Oklahoma for a while, ma'am?
Right. The draft was still very active in 1954.
Okay.
That's whenever a young man turned 21, he could be drafted into the service for 2 years. So we had been dating probably 3 years by that time, and we knew that Edward was going to be drafted in January or February, and he wanted to get married so that I could go with him after basic training to wherever he went. So that's what we did. We got married December the 26th, 1954. And he went to the service in February. And after he had boot training, he was transferred to Little Rock, Arkansas, where I joined him for a couple of weeks, and then we moved everything out to Oklahoma. And we finished his 2 years out in Lawton, Oklahoma, at Fort Sill. And then came home, and he went back to work for his uncle, W.G. Kilby, on the cattle farm, cattle ranch. And we've been there ever since. We raised 4 children, 2 girls and 2 boys. And the 2 boys have stayed on the ranch. They've got side jobs. Bo, or W.E., is the oldest boy, and he has a trucking business where he hauls cattle from one market to another out in Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, Florida base. He doesn't do that all year. There's just certain times of the year that goes on. Otherwise, he works on the ranch, and he's got a little place in Alabama, a little ranch up there. So he's back and forth. J.W. stayed here and stayed on the farm all the time. And he's got a fertilizer business where he puts fertilizer out on large areas, large pastures and groves. So that's his side job. Otherwise, he's on the ranch at all times and manages it. Our oldest was Lynn. She became a learning disability teacher and has worked in, we've had the pleasure of starting 3 different private schools for learning disability children through our years. JW had quite a learning disability problem whenever he was first started school, and there was none in Seminole County to take care of those problems. So we finally found a wonderful teacher, Mary Dunn, who helped us start PACE School. And the problem that JW had was seeing upside down and backwards. And glasses could not help that. You just had to retrain the mind somehow or other, and it takes a lot of training to get that done. So in the process, as I said earlier, we had we've started 3 schools, and we've got 3 wonderful schools. And Lynn has been a teacher. In fact, she retired this past summer. She's taught 33 years in learning disability. Our youngest daughter, Reba, lives in Sumter County, and her family has cattle over there. So in Lynn's retirement, she's helping the boys on the ranch now. She works with them whenever we mark and brand. And both of the boys' wives help give shots, and some of them, and they ride a little bit too. And I've got 3 grandsons, Robert, J.K., and C.W. Yarborough.
Are they all from have the same parents, or?
No.
Which grandkids go
okay.
to which kids?
Bo has a son named Robert.
Okay.
He's probably 26 now, and he works for the Forestry Service on Snow Hill Road. And he has a little girl, 6 years old, Gracie, and they're expecting a second child around December the 21st. It'll be a little boy.
Oh, do they have a name picked out already, ma'am?
They do. But I can't tell you right now. they have, then J.W. has 2 sons, James Kilby, who we call J.K., and right now he's doing his junior year at Gainesville and college, and a double-A student all the way across, I'm proud to say. Then CW, who was born with a slight problem similar to his dad's, and he's in Bridges Academy now. That's one of the schools that we started, and is doing real well. He's 15 years old and about 6'2". He's a big fella.
Playing football?
He's not playing football right now, but he does ranch rodeos.
Okay.
Yeah, he has played football, but prefers the rodeos.
I got you.
They're all interested in 4-H. JW's wife is Frances Yarbrough, and she is a teacher, and she is our 4-H leader also. So we've got a wonderful 4-H group out our way, about 43 kids in the group. They show animals at Central Florida Fair every year.
And what is the 4-H stand for, ma'am?
4-H is to teach the children about agriculture.
Oh, okay.
Head, heart, health, and hands is the 4-H's. They raise steers, pigs, chickens, rabbits, sheep, goats. They also plant gardens. You can do just about anything that you're interested in through the 4-H program.
And how long is the program? Is it like a summer program? They do it for
no,
a certain
it's
amount
all,
of time?
No, it's around year.
Okay.
Year no. round. Well, if you're doing an animal, you don't have to feed that animal all year. But you do about 6 months, 6 to 8 months of it, of feeding the animal. Then it goes to the fair, and it's shown and auctioned off to the highest bidder. And they buy the animals. Some people butcher the animal and has it for food. Some people give it to, like the Methodist Children's Home, for them to eat. Or to the Russell House. We've got quite a bit of food like that donated down through the years.
Okay.
Then they get money back to pay for the feed that they put in the animal.
And, oh, by the way, thank you very much for I got everybody in your family covered now. But you work in the cattle industry, correct, ma'am?
I'm sorry?
You work with the cattle as well, right? Did you start working when you came back from Oklahoma with your husband? Or
yes.
Did you go back to Piggly Wiggly for any amount of time, or did you go straight into the cattle industry and if you stayed there the entire time?
No, I stayed home at that time because there was quite a few older people in Ed's family that needed to be looked after, and the only place to buy groceries back then was Sanford, which was 12 miles from Geneva. So I did the little chauffeuring back and forth of about five different older people in his family, and just helped where I was needed. If we had a garden planted, I always picked the vegetables, helped pick the vegetables and can them. Back then we didn't have too much running water, so Mondays were wash day. I'd fix a fire under the big old wash pot and heat the water, put it in the washing machine for Edward's mother to wash clothes. Tuesday was days to iron. You used your wash water to mop the floors with, being as conservative as we could be with the water. And Wednesdays we did other things around the house, but Mondays was always wash day and Tuesdays was always iron day.
Did you not have indoor plumbing in your house at that time, ma'am?
We had both. Both.
Okay.
The outdoor was there because that's what had been there to begin with. But they had put indoor plumbing at Edward's home about 5 years before Okay. Before we got married.
And when did you get involved with the cattle industry, ma'am?
With the cattle?
Yes, ma'am.
That was started in our area and in Ed's family by his grandfather, E.H. Kilby, who came here from Pensacola as a young man way back in the late 1800s. He stayed with a man by the name of C.S. Lee from Oviedo, lived in his barn, and worked orange groves till he got enough money to buy a little piece of land. And then after he got married and had a family of his own, the boys grew up, and W.G., his second child, stayed with him, and they hunted hogs, wild hogs, on the St. John's River area, and would feed them out, and butcher them, and take them to the Piggly Wiggly and sell them. And they accumulated enough money to buy some land and buy some cows by hunting the wild hogs. Okay. Then in 1949, Florida passed a law that all the animals had to be fenced in. So up until then, they roamed free anywhere on the land that was in the area. And of course, you wanted to keep them close to the river because that was where they could get their water and good grass too. So Mr. Kilby focused on purchasing land adjacent to the St. John's River where so he would have water as well as grass. And that's what they did. They had land in Volusia County, and then he came over and bought some from Mr. C.S. Lee along Highway 46 and the St. John's River, bordered by Snow Hill on the west side. And altogether, at one point, we had about 12,000 acres that was under fence. So, a lot of fences to keep up because you did different pastures for the cows to live in. And you circulate your cows. You don't leave them on the same pasture all the time.
Okay.
So that's just part of the way you work cattle.
And why would you rotate the cattle to different fenced areas, ma'am?
Well, they eat the grass down, and you have to give it time to grow back. And if you leave them on that same place too long, they'll just pull it up by the roots, and then you don't have any grass at all.
Okay.
So you rotate them about every 28 days.
Oh, that frequently?
Mm-hmm. You can leave them a little longer, but it just really depends on the weather. Mm-hmm. Everything with farming and ranching depends on the weather.
So if it was rainier weather, you could keep them there longer, and drier weather, you'd have to move them faster because the grass wouldn't grow as much, ma'am?
Is that part of the weather? That would be safe to say pretty well.
Okay.
Yeah. But warm nights is really when grass grows. That's why grass grows so good down here in Florida. But the dirt, the sand, is very porous. So you have to really fertilize a lot. And back then, they didn't fertilize much. They didn't know that back then. It was always native grass. But now we've got what's called improved grass. So you fertilize the improved grass. The native grass, like on the river, grows on its own because the water and the high water fertilizes the native grass.
And what is improved grass?
Argentina Bahia is one, and there's a Pensacola Bahia, and that's the two grasses that we use the most in our cattle ranch.
Okay, ma'am.
And there's a lot of different grasses, though, Jeff.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I just didn't know if it was native grass in other areas, or if they've been, like, tinkered with.
No, we clean. Down through the years, we've cleaned up a lot of land and made what's referred to as improved pastures.
Mm.
That's on the higher land. And so you fertilize these places. We've made them into hay fields. Some of them are hay fields and some of them are just regular pastures. But you always have to fertilize the improved pasture.
Could you tell me a little more about cattle raising as is?
All right, we have what's referred to as a cow-calf operation. Okay. That means you raise the calf to about between 600 and 800 pounds and then take it to market. Several years ago, we had cattle markets in Ocala, Webster, Kissimmee, Lakeland, and Okeechobee. We also had butcher houses at different parts of the state, but we no longer have but one butcher house, and that's Center Hill over in Sumter County, close to Bushnell. The Ocala market is still open, and Webster is still open, and Lakeland and Okeechobee are still open. But the market that we would go to every week with our cattle was Kissimmee. That was the closest one to us. That closed about 20 years ago now. So now we use mostly Lakeland. But we also, let me back up just a little bit. We lost Edward in the year 2000.
Okay, ma'am.
And there was a little bit of changing in the way that we do our cattle. As I said earlier, W.E. has a two trucks that he hauls cattle out west with. So we would take our calves in his semis to markets out in Texas and sell them. And we continue to do that today. We had done that a little bit before Edward passed away, but not on the big scale like the boys have changed the operation a little bit. But the cow-calf operation means that you raise a calf and sell it and breed the cow back. So you buy registered bulls and put the and we have a mixed herd. Our main stock are the Brahmas because they get along so well here in Florida. They're very tolerable of the mosquitoes and the hot weather and the rain and the, and such. But we have brought the English breeds in through the years, the Black Angus and the White-Faced Hereford and the Charolais, which is a cream-colored cow. And you cross that with the Brahmas, and that makes for a good mama cow.
Okay.
So a good breeding cow is pretty good to raise a calf for about 12 to 13 years with good grass and good feed. A bull is probably good for maybe they start breeding at 3 years, and they're good for 3 to 5 years. So you have to keep bringing in new bulls. Each year you bring in a certain amount of bulls. One bull can service about 35 cows. So you have to go according to your largest herd to see how large your herd is, to see how many bulls you need. A good bull will cost you between $2,000 and $3,000. If you buy a bred heifer, which is a young cow, that will cost you between $500 and $700. But if she has a calf in the next 6 months or so, then it'll take 6 months to get that calf up to, which will put you into a year. That calf will bring back what that mother cost. Okay. Meanwhile, she's gotten bred again, ready to have another calf. And that's the cycle that you work through.
Okay, ma'am. And what would be the size of your herd? You said there's one bull for every 35 cows, correct?
Yeah, you want it something pretty close to that.
Okay.
We've got about 1,000 head.
Okay, ma'am. Do you still have, are you still using the 12,000 acres? I think that...
No. Mm. Down through the years.
Yes, ma'am.
For inheritance tax purposes. Mm-hmm. We've had to sell land. We sold everything that we had in Volusia County. And we sold 9,000 acres to the state of Florida, which has been turned into a game refuge and parks. It's overflow land that's not really a buildable property for homes. Mm-hmm. It's real low. But an old cow can get along real well on it. So we've got 1,400 acres left in the family now. We have leased the 9,000 acres back from the state to use for the cows.
Okay.
We have to pay for that lease so much an acre, and also keep up the fences and keep up the roads. And there's a lot of responsibility there.
Okay, ma'am. I noticed you mentioned before that you had, at one point in time, this many markets and this many butcher houses. How come that number has decreased over time? Were they personally yours, or were they houses that you used?
No, they were. Those were the ones that we could take our animals to.
Okay.
They were not ours personally. Kissimmee closed because of the management. And so many people started moving into the area around Kissimmee and Orlando and up our way. And the little cattle ranches were just non-existent anymore. They were building homes. A farmer could make more, and a rancher could make more selling his land than he could make with the cows on the land. Does that make sense to you, Jeffrey?
It does, ma'am.
Okay, all right. He could sell his land, and at that time put it at interest, which was probably 12%, 8 and 12% interest for a number of years ago, and could live on that and not have to work as hard. And the real estate was paying 5 and 6 and a whole lot more for land, an acre. See, so they could handle that a lot easier. So numbers were down, and that's why markets have to close. Same with the butcher houses. Same thing.
Okay, ma'am. That makes perfect sense to me. Sounds like supply and demand. There's people got kind of like squeezed out with the increased population.
That's right.
Gotcha, ma'am.
That's right. Now, going back into the 50s here in Seminole County, there was about 6 families that made their living on cattle all around in Seminole County. Right now, and for the last 10 years, there's 3 families that make their living on cows. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people that's got 20 head or 10 or 20 or 40 or 60 or 150 head of cows, but they do something on the side to make a living. They work in a grocery store, or they mechanic or something else to help them make a living. But there's only 3 families that just make their living on the ranch. And that's the Robert Lee family. Okay. Of Oviedo. Betty Slusemeyer, who is Edward's sister in Geneva. And our ranch, Ed Yarborough Ranches in Geneva. But they all kind of congregate around the St. John's River. Remember I said we needed the water?
Yes, ma'am, I do.
So the land adjacent and joins the Econ Creek and the St. John's River. All of these three ranches go around into that area.
And do the ranches ever, do you communicate with the other ranches?
Oh, yes, definitely.
In what ways, ma'am?
Right now, by phone.
Well, I asked that. I should have known that was coming, ma'am.
That's okay.
I mean, in what capacity? I don't know. Is it like a very positive relationship?
Yes.
Do you help each other?
Yes, definitely. If one group might be marketing Brandon and need a little help, or they might be cutting hay and their tractors break down, they come over and get our tractor. Or one of our boys will take our tractor and go over and bale for them. And they do the same for us.
Okay, so...
Yeah, it's a very congenial atmosphere. We have a very active cattlemen's association in the county. And you don't have to be a cattleman to join it, because every young boy wants to be a cowboy. But nevertheless, this is a group that is also a state group. And we get information from the University of Florida about feed, fertilizer, medicines, and all that help us raise the cattle to the better level that it is today.
So the business has improved over time, business
very
practices?
Much, very much, yes. See, the cows were brought here back in the 1500s by the Spanish people. Mm-hmm. And they were what we refer to now as scrub cattle, because they lived in the scrubs, the woods.
Yes, ma'am.
And they were all horns and bones. They weren't very fat. But now we have to put meat on their bones so that the steaks will turn out good.
So
and the taste is there.
Yes, ma'am. I know I do love a good steak. Do you know where your cattle end up eventually? Do you know if it's sold in Florida or?
We do have that possibility of tracing every cow where it goes to now. That is fairly new in our particular business world. I'd say five years or so back that all of this started. That is a health precaution.
Okay.
Because if you have some tainted meat for some reason or other, it could go back to the owners to find out if the meat was tainted at the ground level, so to speak, before it was butchered, or at the butcher house, or in transit to the grocery store.
Right, you gotta find it.
So you've got to find that situation. And so we do have that facility to do now.
Do you keep track of where you're going?
Yes.
Do you know? Do they usually end up? Because I know you said they transport a lot to Texas.
They do, and they feed them out there. Then they get sold again to stores and such.
Do they end up all over the place?
Man? All over.
Oh, okay, I didn't know if there was a concentration. Like, okay,
no.
The Arbor cows tend to be in Massachusetts where they end up. And, okay.
But we do have buyers that really, they buy ours sight unseen because they know from experience that that we use the good bulls, and we use the right feed and medicines and everything to keep them well. So there's a group that bid on ours sight unseen.
Is that a good feeling?
That's a very comfortable feeling.
And how long has the family been in this business? How far back does that
go? My children, Ed's and my children, are one, two, three, or fifth generation.
Okay.
Fifth generation. And the grandchildren, C.W., J.K., and Robert, are the next generation. And Gracie and her little brother will be the sixth generation. So that's the way it goes.
So you're covered for now.
Right now.
Okay, ma'am.
It's like a baseball team almost, but you got to have help. That's one of the things that I take great pride in, is Edward coming through and working the kids and working the ranch with the children and one other man all the years that they were growing up and all. They had to work hard, and they still do. It's not an easy life.
It doesn't sound easy, ma'am.
You don't get to just close the gate and go on vacation. You have to stay close by.
There's work involved?
There's a lot of work involved. Have you ever dug a fence hole?
Yes, ma'am.
Fence post hole?
Yes, ma'am.
You ever strung barbed wire?
Barbed wire? Yes, ma'am.
You know what barbed wire is?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
I'm in the military. We have our fair share of sharp pieces of metal that we set up.
Yeah. Well, see, we have to grow our grass for the cows to eat. Mm-hmm. You got to provide them with water, and you got to keep an eye on them because they get sick just like we do.
Yes. Okay. So it's a very family-oriented business. Not a lot of outside help. A lot of
no. But we've got people that we know that if we need help, we can usually call on them. We have one hired man that works 5 days a week. So.
Okay.
Of course, the boys, our boys, CW. No, JW, and Bo, ride through all the time. They're out there. Pretty much.
Yeah, it sounds like can be a tough job.
It is, but it's an interesting job. It's rewarding. It's rewarding in many ways, Jeff. You see that whenever the grass starts greening up after you've had a hard winter and the frost has killed it and everything's brown, and you're feeding hay every day and you're feeding corn and the ingredients that it takes to make the different types of feed that we use by the bagfuls. And spring starts coming in, and the grass starts turning greener. The rains start to come, and you can smile again. But you always know it's God's country to begin with. You're just the caregiver. That's the attitude that I've tried to teach and firmly believe in.
It sounds like it's done a great job.
We've done well. We've been blessed.
And I know you said one of your grandkids is 26, I think one of the older ones.
Yes.
Will he be working in the college season?
Oh, he helps. Yes, on his days off. And fortunately, his office is right across the street from our larger set of cow pens where we go in off of Snow Hill Road. Mm-hmm. So he can come over every now and then and check on things. But on his days off, he can help us.
I thought he was a student at...
No, that's the second one. This is the oldest one.
Oh, okay, ma'am.
This is Robert, the oldest one, that works for the forestry unit.
Okay.
And usually Mondays are his days off because he'll work weekends. So we plan to do a lot of pen work or heavy riding on Mondays when we've got Robert a lot of times, because he's a good, big, strapping boy.
I did have a question from a while ago, and I just, I don't want to interrupt the time. It was actually goes even farther back. It was back quite a ways, actually. You said early on that your husband had been drafted into the service, correct?
Correct.
And this was in the early 50s, 1954,
yes.
I believe.
Actually, it was 55.
Oh, 55, okay. Mm-hmm. Was that a common occurrence at that
it
time,
was.
Ma'am?
Yes.
And
you had the boys, when they turned 21.
Yes, ma'am.
They had to register. Or might have to register at 18, but they had to go by 21.
Definitely, you get your draft card at 18, ma'am. Okay. That has not changed.
Oh, it hadn't?
No, okay. I have my draft card.
Okay, but he had to go.
Okay.
Yeah.
So almost all males at that
back
time.
Back then, yes.
Okay, I didn't realize that was still occurring after the end of World War II at that.
Yes.
Okay, I just wanted to make that clear.
Good.
I didn't know if it was an exception for him, if it was
No, in fact, they did make exceptions. It's called hardship. If a family a lot of agricultural families did get excused because they needed the boys on the farms.
Couldn't afford it. Okay, ma'am. But that family could, or he chose to do it regardless of?
Well, no, they didn't give him a choice.
Oh. Hell of the military. Okay, ma'am. I'd like to do some more general questions about your life. Do you have any stories or childhood memories that come to mind that you'd like to share and have recorded, ma'am? Anything that you find hilarious or that was really important during your life as you were growing up or even past that?
Mm-hmm. I have always felt I was very blessed having people in my life that would take the patience to teach me many of the things that they had learned in life, older people. And my mother working, as I said earlier, I stayed with my grandmother in Oxford. I also had the opportunity to stay with a great aunt on my mother's side, Grace Bevel in Bushnell. She never had children, but she accepted me as hers, and mother let me stay with her quite a bit in my younger years. And she was a learned person, so, and most willing to teach me how to crochet, how to cook, how to be good to others, and a lot of Bible verses and rhymes, because in her day, a lot of the teaching was done by voice from one to the other, and singing it or either telling the stories as we're doing that, like the history and such. But she taught by repeating rhymes and songs and things. And states and capitals, multiplication tables. There was a railroad track right next to her house. And we had to, for me to get to play on the railroad track between trains, I had to learn to spell certain words, big hard words. And then I could go over and walk the railroad tracks.
Okay.
And that was, like I said, we didn't have TVs or radios back then. We invented our own playtime and playthings. But I had Aunt Grace, and I had Granny O'Berry and my mom. Those were the close ladies in my life until we moved to Geneva. And then Edward had an aunt, Catherine Kilby, who was his uncle W.G.'s wife. They had no children either, but she took a liking to me and was just like a mother in teaching me, because she too was a school teacher. And then Edward's mother, Pearl Yarbrough, was like a mother to me. We called her Mama Pearl, especially whenever the children started coming. Ed and I were married 4 years before we had any children because we didn't want to live in the house with his folks and raise children. So we waited till we accumulated enough money to build a house. And we were given the piece of property by Mr. Kilby to build right there between his mother and him. They put the young couple there to help the older people. That was what I was told. And we did. We worked together beautifully as a family. But, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, are there any historical events, even international or domestic?
I remember the day that the Second World War was declared. I had broken my arm. I was in the third grade, doing something very foolish. The seesaws at school were built up about 3 foot high and the boards were about 12 foot long. And I was acting like Tarzan. I was standing up on one end and there was five girls on the other. And they would bounce me up. They would hit the ground hard with their end, bounce me up, and I'd come down. And it's supposed to hit the board. And I was pretty good at it. Till I fell one morning and broke my arm, my shoulder, right in the shoulder. And the doctors wanted to remove my arm because gangrene set in. They could not set it. Now, at that time, Second World War was going on.
Okay.
And all the good doctors had been taken to war. So it was just a group of older doctors in Ocala. No surgeons. And my mother was pregnant with my third sister. And she just begged the doctor not to take my arm off. That girls couldn't get along without an arm. And this will show you how God works. God sent a surgeon home to Ocala, Dr. Davis. And he was home for 2 weeks because they were going to ship him overseas. And Mother's Dr. Ferguson heard that he was home, and he called him up and told him about my arm. And he said told him that we're going to have to cut it off unless he thought he could do something. He said he didn't have any idea what to do, but they would try. So they fashioned some type of plate to fit around the bone because it was broken in the joint, so to speak, where the arm joins the shoulder. And it had four screws in this plate, and the operation took 6 hours. And that was a long operation back then, especially. And they said I could use that plate for about a year, but then they'd have to go in there and take it out because my bone would still be growing and it wouldn't stay properly. But it would probably never be a working arm. But during all of this, mother had the baby, and she stayed home with me, and they didn't have physical therapy that much back then. But mother would rub this arm and exercise it, and I wasn't let ride a bicycle or skate, and I was a very active sports person. But today I have use of my arm because of the doctors, and they did the surgery the next year. Took the plate out, and I've got about a 14-inch scar on the arm that doesn't bother me a bit to show. I'm proud to have the arm. But that's the two of them. Oh, and getting back, I'm regressing. During this time, I said I remembered the day that they
war
was declared. I remember reading in the Bible as a youngster that God said he would destroy the earth the next time by fire. The first time he destroyed the earth by water.
Yes, ma'am.
And they talked about the atomic bomb. Maybe it wasn't war declared. It was when they dropped the atomic bomb.
At the end of the war.
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
Whenever they did that, I said, well, that's what's going to have a part in God's next coming is the atomic bomb. That was just my mental perception.
That stuck out to you.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
But that could have changed my whole life, too. I could have lost my arm on that deal had Dr. Davis not come home.
It's definitely a memory that would have stuck with me, too, ma'am. We're about to wrap up. Do you have anything you'd like to share before we go, ma'am? Anything that you feel that we overlooked or bypassed?
I think you've done a marvelous job, Jeff. I just feel it a great privilege to have had the opportunity to grow up in the little community of Geneva. Geneva is made up of a lot of older people that have retired from businesses, but they are willing to work with youngsters down through the years, through the school systems and the different community groups that we have out there, mm-hmm. through the Homemakers and through the 4-H and the Heritage Center and churches. I just feel very fortunate to have been put there for a reason. And I've tried to repay it in every way that I could by working with the youth as much as I can all through the years. So I feel very blessed to have been there.
Thank you very much, ma'am, for coming in today.
Thank you.